Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 18th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Uncomfortable Neighbors, Vecinos Incomodos, facilitated by Jim Tiffany and Rosemary Lopez Tiffany. Disc number FO-2005-14C.
I'm Jim, and I am not a Hispanic person, and so my background for being here, my, credibility, I suppose, other than being married to Rosemary, which is my main credibility right now, is that I was, when I was 10 years old, my family moved to Mexico for what we thought was going to be a summer vacation, turned into a four-year stay. And so I was in Guadalajara, and at that time was in the 50s, was a really nice, traditional, old Mexico thing. We lived there 4 years, and I went to the Mexican school. And so I had the experience with, you know, being in a place where nobody spoke my language, and nobody understood me at all. Yesterday, Rosemary reminded me, I forgot to tell the story that I usually tell about my mother coming to the school one day to ask the principal, you know, to have the kids stop beating up on little Jimmy, you know. And so it was just, it was so embarrassing for me because she was so different. You know? Mm-hmm. She's 5'8", big old Irish, red-headed, blue-eyed, you know. And there she is, trouncing down the hallway. You know, to talk to the principal, and I was just dead of embarrassment. But the principal listened and then told her, don't ever come back here. I heard you, now go away, don't ever come back. So, and that was the way it was. So I learned fast, you learned survival fast. I learned to make friends with Tamayo, thanks to the alphabet. Tamayo and Tiffany sat next to each other. And as luck would have it, Tamayo was the biggest kid in class. And so I made sure to be good buddies with Tamayo, and that ended most of my problems there at school. Anyway, I put in 2 years at fourth grade. I flunked fourth grade because I didn't, by the time, you know, most of the year was gone by the time I figured out what the heck anybody wanted. So that was by my interest. That's the root of my interest in bilingual education. I've been interested in that ever since. I met Rosemary at a meeting on bilingual education in Wenatchee, and that's how, you know, she's been a bilingual education teacher for many years too. So I suppose that's the background that ties us together. I was 2 years in the Peace Corps in Dominican Republic, teaching teacher training program, rural elementary school teachers, and the one thing we could never get across to anyone was any reason why they should be on time. And that's one of the things that a couple of folks here asked me to talk about today, asked us to deal with, is a sense of time. We'll talk about that some more if, you know, if Holden is interested in including Latino people as either staff or guests, then how would you go about that and what kind of concepts might be barriers. Well, immediately the idea of keeping time comes to the front. So we'll talk some more about that, but that's, I've been the editor, publisher of El Mundo. Actually, we own it. Rosemary and I purchased it from Wenatchee World 10 years ago, and it's doing real well right now. That's what I've been doing for the past 17 years now, publishing El Mundo every week. And Rosemary, how about you?
And I was born in Texas. Come from a very large family of 12 of us, and I'm middle child. we were a farm working family, chasing the crops all over the United States, basically. But when there wasn't crops to pick, then we would go on welfare and food stamps and all kinds of government food and, you know, anything you can imagine to make it through. I started, like Jim, started school as a second language learner, not knowing English, and that was difficult for me to took me many years to get to understand the language to be able to function academically. And somehow, I don't know how, I made it through school. I think I was just stubborn enough that I had been in the fields and I knew from a very young age that being out in the fields was not for me. It was something I knew from a very young age that it was hard work and I probably could not make a living on it. In fact, I was fired from a few jobs out in the field. I mean, how do you get fired from that? But I managed to do that. But so I stayed in school in spite of everything, and part of my difficulties with school was being a second language learner, being a migrant, being poor, and I was the type of student that teachers didn't want to see coming in because you were nothing but problems. You really were, because you had so many gaps in your learning that you made it difficult for the teacher. And there weren't bilingual programs back then or any such thing. I mean, you either spoke English or you failed. And so I can remember being smacked a couple of times by the teacher for speaking, trying to explain to her that I wanted to go to the bathroom in Spanish. And, you know, just being smacked because she says, you don't speak Spanish here. So I don't know how I made it through school, but I did. And I went on to receive my college degree and then my master's in bilingual and migrant education. And I've taught for 25 years. I'm currently teaching, have taught different programs, bilingual, migrant, first grade, second grade, third grade, and a few fourth, and pull-out programs, but I'm currently teaching kindergarten in a dual language program with kindergartners, and truly am enjoying that. My experience with Mexico was a few years ago when I went for the first time, because I was born in Texas, and so were my parents, and so were their parents, so... for most of my family, no one's ever been to Mexico except me, I think. And when I went, I truly fell in love with the people, the culture, and just everything about it. I just felt like I was home, and came back and really appreciated the kids that I had and the families that I had. Because up until then, I didn't realize what they'd really gone through to get here. And so the people that we're going to be talking about are the people from Michoacan, Mexico, and those are the families that we have here in the state and the families that we have a lot of experience with, and also the culture exchanges that Jim and I go through every day. And basically the number one is time. That was the most difficult one for us. I think if we had any conflicts in our marriage, it had to have been time, the sense of time. Because I go at a slower pace than he does.
That's why I lost all that hair. Got that German in me. Has to be on time.
But for those of you who weren't here yesterday, we did go over, I don't know how many people were not here yesterday. Oh, okay. We went over labels and what to call people, and we're not going to go through all of them, but certainly don't want to say Spanish. We're just going to go really quick. But basically what you want to call people would be Latino. And that's the term that is being picked up by the schools and in the East Coast and such, and all the entertainers. It's all Latino, Latina, Latino. So that's the term that is really in. It used to be Hispanic, and I heard Jim say it today. We say Hispanic, Latino, but Latino's the term that we're moving toward. We give, for those of you who weren't here yesterday, we give a presentation that's basically about 5 to 6 hours long, and we kind of have shortened it for our purposes here.
That agenda's in your handouts, right there on the front page. Agenda that we never get through, because we do ask people to please interrupt and ask questions or make comments. That's part of the deal. We really want you to do that. So please do that. But that agenda there is what she just put up.
And Latinos, where are the Latinos? Just a brief Just a small sample here of who are the Latinos, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans. It covers Cubans, Chicanos, Mexican Americans. The people that we're going to focus on are people from Mexico, and they're in the Michoacan area, which is right in here. This is Mexico City, and they would be right in here. And we also have a large group of people from Oaxaca would be in these two areas. Okay? And we went through, our discussion takes us through, this is about 3 hours long. When we cover the characteristics, it's about 3 hours long. Yesterday, we were only able to focus, we focused on the family-centered and respect, because we feel that those are really big topics. Today, because we have time, we're going to go back and cover, I don't know what we decided on, couple more
time
of these.
And the interior.
Oh, we're going to cover time,
yeah.
And this one, and let's see, maybe chauvinistic, I don't know. So we'll cover a few more today. Okay.
And yesterday's session is also on tape for those folks who were not here. So anyone who's going to be here during Abriendo, and if you're interested, it was very helpful.
So is yesterday's session different content?
Yeah, we were asked to maybe consider doing it a little differently each day because it is normally about a six-hour, you know, presentation. So to give a smattering of it, we give a little bit different shot each day. That's what we decided to do.
Okay, so you want to start with this or that?
Well, I'd like to point out these first.
Sure.
Okay, we were talking about, Rosemary and I were talking at breakfast today about, we did get a couple questions yesterday about to consider what people call the Holden culture and the Latino culture as we know it, and to think about how those might bump heads or either that or integrate. And so I wanted to point out this pink sheet that's in your handouts here, the last two paragraphs. If you're thinking about integrating different cultures, check out those last two paragraphs. This is a report of the State Commission on Hispanic Affairs to the governor a couple years ago. And it's surprisingly frank and open in its language. That's why we went ahead and copied it, because we thought it was pretty interesting. The last sentence of that, second to the last paragraph, the result is that many key mainstream institutions in Washington State do not change to meet the new needs of their clients as a way to better provide services, but instead force a one-size-fits-all approach. This is classical American, isn't it? One-size-fits-all. We have other ways of saying that, don't we? We say, we're going to do the same thing for everybody. Everybody gets treated the same. That's classical Americano, isn't it? And that's going to run up against a lot of issues when everybody involves a bunch of really different people. And how do you know that your system that you have there is not really grievously insulting to someone, you know? We're just lucky we're here in Washington State, where we don't have to worry about saying something that will insult the Puerto Ricans or the Cubans or the Dominicans or the, you know, because we have 93% of the Latinos in Washington State are related in some way to Mexico. So for us, that's our advantage. We learn one country, we learn Mexico, its history, its culture, that's our advantage. We don't have to worry too much about a lot of others and, gee, did I insult this Colombian by saying something, you know? We learn how they do stuff in Mexico, and we're on the way here in Washington State. But this generic approach, and then they summarize, and I think maybe there's a little hyperbole in here, you know, hyperbole. The generic approach has led to dropout rates and crime and all that. Well, I don't know about that, but anyway, they're looking at it as, you know, as being this one-size-fits-all idea, this idea that, hey, we do this for everybody and everybody should do it the same way. That leads to a lot of conflict. It's okay not to do the same thing for everybody. You know, I have three boys that I raised, and I made, you know, this one of the conflicts between me and my ex-wife was that everything we should do the same for the boys. And I always thought, no, I'm going to take Luke out for an ice cream, and Luke and I are going to go to a movie. But I made sure that Max and Ethan got the same time from me. You know, only we did different stuff because those were three different boys and they had to have different stuff. So it just the one size fits all thing just wasn't appropriate. I didn't. We wanted to point out also this thing. Thinking about Holden culture and Latinos. This one is our quotes written by two Mexican authors, very heavy hitters, big names in Mexico, Conchero and Reyes Heroles, their publishers and authors. And they sat down to talk about what would happen in a free trade agreement and what kind of things we need to think about. The first thing they talk about is time. That's the first thing that they talk about. Mexicans tend not to be punctual and do not respect the time of others, especially subordinates. They'll sit and make you wait. The Mexican will maintain good personal relations at the expense of schedules. The schedule does not determine what you do.
We saw this in Mexico, I think, a lot. When we spent 11 days there and we were taken to different schools, picked up by different people to attend different functions. And sometimes we'd be sitting there just talking away, not realizing that someone was out in the car waiting to take us to the next location. But the host or whoever we were sitting with wouldn't rush us. They weren't about to rush us or tell us that, hurry up, we need to go because we need to be at the next location by such and such a time. I mean, it would just kind of come up and, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes later, you realize, oh my gosh, they didn't tell you you were supposed to be somewhere at 9 o'clock. But they weren't about to rush you or make you feel uncomfortable, or to them it was kind of like a put down if they said, hurry up and eat your breakfast. Because, you know, it didn't, I mean, they're going to, it's all about the relationship and it's all about making you feel at ease.
Let's go to a Mexican restaurant. Okay, so we walk in. We're in Mexico. That's what I mean by a Mexican restaurant. We're in Mexico. We go to a restaurant. What does it look like? It doesn't look at all like it looks here, does it? It's not all divvied up into little booths and stuff. Because we individualistic Americanos want our privacy and so on, and so we have our little booths. In Mexico, a restaurant is open, you know. So we go in there, and we get served whenever we tell the waitress that we're ready. And we can sit there and talk as long as we want, and nobody's going to come and ask us, can I get that plate for you, and do you need anything else, and is everything okay? Nobody even talks to you. The waitress stands and is aware of you, but once you look at her and ask, she'll come and talk to you. She or he. Okay? But that's I mean, it's not, and we've often commented on that, about restaurants. How if you want to think about the different treatment in time, that's where you see it actually, see it at work. When we were in Mexico, Rosemary, Arturo and I, on a teacher exchange program, Arturo, our teacher friend, we were wandering around town, it was late, and we walked into this restaurant right on the beach. Nobody was there, it was like closed, but there was a guy there, and he says, oh, that's okay, come on in. So we sit down, and Rosemary says, wouldn't that be great if we could go out and sit on the sand at the beach and eat out there. And I said, this is Mexico, man. So he said to the waiter, hey, could we go out there? Oh, sure, no problem. Let's go. He grabs the darn table and, so we all grabbed our chairs and we went out and he plucked stuff in the sand. And
we're right on the beach watching the moon.
And then this guy runs back in and gets stuff and he's doing this on the beach.
Walking on the sand, trying to get our food up to us.
And we had the greatest time out there with the moon setting over the ocean and everything. And just us. And the idea that, it was closing time or that you're taking too long or anything like that wasn't even a hint. It was, the experience was without a clock.
And sometimes you get the feeling that the waitresses really aren't paying attention or don't care because you get done with your food and your plate stays there, or they don't really come around to your table to ask, if you need anything else. But that's not it at all. The idea is that they're going to let you enjoy and relax. And they're respecting you and your time. And as Jim said, if you need anything, of course, they'll come right away. There are several restaurants in Wenatchee that are Mexican restaurants. And you can really see those that have become very understand the American way, and those that are still kind of holding on to their own traditional way. Because there's one that we really kind of, we like, but we seldom go there because they have their waiters, waitresses constantly, anything else, anything else, anything else, and they're pulling plates before you're even done, and rushing. And we're like, don't you have enough plates back there, So, and they're constantly, they're, would you like anything else? Can I get you anything else? Is there, and just rushing, and you have this sense of I'm being rushed here. And so we seldom go there. But you can really see those that have caught on to the more Americanized way, where they know we want to go in and hurry up and eat and get out.
And so, they give you a bill.
In most cases.
They'll put the bill. There anything else I'll help you with, or I'll be your cashier. In Mexico, you don't get a bill until you ask for it. You're ready for the bill now. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And a lot of the hotels will just really, cater to your needs. If you have a big family gathering and you really need three large tables to play cards or to do whatever it is you want, they're really going to try hard to, they will. They'll figure out a way for you to get those three tables and they'll really cater to your needs, which is really kind of nice.
So we were over at the breakfast today and the announcement was something like, the gist of it is, get out here because the schedule says that we're going to prepare for lunch. So we both said, wow, how would you deal with that in Mexico? That would be really different that a schedule would dictate to you what that, especially if you're eating or visiting, or if there's, some interpersonal relations going on. That trumps everything in Mexico. Personal relationships are all important. And to sit around, if there were a group sitting around visiting, eating or not, plates or not, whatever, party time or visiting time takes absolute priority over everything. And nobody would think to tell them, hey, our schedule, is such that you folks need to clean this up and we need to get this room. That would just be unheard of in Mexico. So anyway, thinking about these cultural issues there,
Do you want to go through this for some more?
That's an interesting one because it's Mexicanos themselves talking.
This one is my favorite.
I like the point they make about the telephone. And I've had this happen to me where a Mexicano or Chicano friend will call me and talk for a little bit and I'm wondering, what does this person want? And they'll finally, how about, lunch? Okay. So we go to lunch, and finally, after an hour or so of just kind of visiting, would you, you know, what I really need is a letter of recommendation for a program that I'm doing and so on. Oh, sure. I mean, you could have done that on the phone. You could have just said, hey, I need a letter of recommendation. Fine. Could have taken care of it in 30 seconds. But this whole process, you have to attend to the personal relationship first. You know? The greeting in the United States takes maybe 10, 15 seconds. Hi, how you doing? Oh, fine. Okay, save. Listen, the reason I'm calling is, that's it, you know. But in Mexico, it could take a long time. To the point where the American is saying, what does this person want? You know, trying to figure out what is it, what's the point here? I like the way they talk about confidence. It's about the fourth one from the bottom where it says, generally speaking, they have little confidence in systems. They don't talk about who they do trust. They talk about who they distrust less. In other words, Mexicanos distrust everybody, is what they're saying. They distrust less churches and schools and are more distrusting of large companies, legislatures, elected officials, bureaucrats. This thing, the next one about living day by day is really, really true. And are focused very much toward the past and the present, as opposed to anything about the future. Because in the future, God takes care of that. Dios dispone. And that's the end of it. Why should we be planning? And they talk in here somewhere about planning also. That Mexicans aren't real good planners. They don't do planning departments. You know, they just take care of stuff as it comes up. And oriented toward the past is very, very true. The past is still very much alive in Mexico. They're still reliving the conquest there. There's a lot of, in newspapers, regular newspapers, that you'll see. There are lots of historical articles. I mean, in the news, it's about, you know, a lot of archaeological stuff goes on, of course. Anytime anybody digs in Mexico, they find something. So there's that past that's always right there for them. And it's different when they come to the United States and they meet people who in many occasions don't even know their grandparents or where their grandparents were from or ever have visited the old countries of where they originally came or know anything about stuff like that. How we sever from the past is interesting to Mexicanos. They don't do that. Okay, any more?
Mexicanos have a... They have, what is it that they say? The planning is really something else. The planning is for today. It's not long-term planning, as Jim mentioned, because, and even in their language, it's when you say goodbye to someone, or I'll see you tomorrow, for example, their response is always, God willing. And it's always the response. And, it's in the language, and they don't, you know, if God wills it, I'll be here tomorrow. If not, you won't see me, you know. So long-term planning is really hard, and I think that's why we have a lot of people living in poverty or struggling, trying to make ends meet, because, you know, it's a day-to-day kind of thing, and planning for college is really not even in the picture. Planning for future needs is not. Insurance companies, that kind of thing, really struggle to make a living, I think, in Mexico, because it's not really something you think of to plan for the future.
Shall we start with the
okay. The
characteristics?
Yeah.
Okay. We picked out, oh, did you want to talk about the chauvinistic thing? Just touch on it?
Sure.
We noted that there is a relative importance of females here in Holden Village. A lot of female power and female authority is here, directors and people like that, coordinators and so on, who are women. And so for most of us, my society, I have learned that that's okay, and I keep my mouth shut about it, you know. I take my higher salary as a man and I run, and I just keep my mouth shut. Mexicano hasn't been that yet. Our Mexicano friends are openly chauvinistic, and they think that that's the way the world ought to be, because God made it that way. You know, God said that women can't be priests. What more proof do you want? You know, and so we have a lot of issues with that, with the farm worker guys who come here and then are faced with a female supervisor. There's an instant problem right there. And women who have to go to work, all of a sudden his wife has to go to work. This is a problem. And then what happens when she makes more money than he does? And all of these blows to his manhood, you know, happen when he comes across the border here. And so this whole tension about being from a chauvinistic society, a fairly openly chauvinistic society, it is really pretty hard for the farm worker family to deal with, or the immigrant family to deal with. In Mexico, when you see an advertisement, oftentimes you still, in the want ads, you'll see good appearance, 26 to 35-year-old female. Good appearance, must apply in person. And you know what all that means. You know, I mean, that's just stuff that you couldn't do here anymore. And so, but they're pretty open about that stuff. They'll be frank and say, you're not cute enough to be my receptionist, sorry. Yeah. And so it's an interesting kind of balance, because a lot of women here will tell you that, well, it's not that much difference here. Walk in front of any construction site where the guys will start whistling at the girls and stuff and saying stuff. So I think we're really not that different. It's just, as I said, in the United States, where men are learning to just not talk about it. I don't know if that's true. That's kind of my take on it. The thing that really hurts women a lot, that really hurts American women a lot, that we don't really think about, is the movies. You have no idea how Hollywood really hurts women, especially in foreign countries. These movies are being seen in foreign countries and taken literally. And so in Mexico, where I lived, and I was a kid walking around the square trying to catch the eye of the cute little girl walking the other way, you know, and having, if I ever did get a chance to talk to her, there's chaperones all over the place. There's brothers and sisters and all this stuff. And all the women are very highly protected and well-guarded. And then I go to a movie and I see an American woman who, 10 minutes after meeting the hero, is in bed with him. And so I go, hey, geez, I should go up there to the United States, man. Why am I going to fight this, you know? And so, and they think, they really do believe that American women are looser and easier and come up here with lots of assumptions. And it's a pretty tough shock when they get here and see that it just isn't that way. You know?
It takes a long time, I think, in Mexico to get to know, you know, for the girlfriend boyfriend thing to occur, you know, the courtship to occur, because there's always someone around, there's always a relative around, and as Jim said, at the plaza where you're going in circles, and then you finally make eye contact. Wow, you know, and after so many times around, you might get to say hi, and. Somewhere, maybe in the next couple of days, after several hundred circles, you might get to walk beside her, and then, or maybe even sit down beside her. But there's always a relative, grandparent, someone around. And then, you know, there's this long, drawn-out thing about, you know, well, you have to wait so many months or so many, you know, whatever length of time before you become engaged, and then before you get married, and then you have to go through all the proper channels and everything. It takes quite a bit of time. And so the guys get fed up with that and think it's easier to come here and just pick up a girl and, you know.
Yes.
And so, and I think they find it a lot easier, though. They really do.
We had the ultimate happen to us in this point about chauvinism in a presentation that we did for, it was a domestic violence conference.
Mm-hmm.
Where there were probably 70 social workers in the room, and they're almost all of them women. And a friend of ours in Wenatchee, from Michoacan, a man, asked if he could come to watch us.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so we said, sure, come on, because he was curious how it would all go, because we talk about people from Michoacan, Mexico. So here's this guy, and he's sitting right in the front row, and one of the social workers asked, well, since chauvinism is the way of life there, can you have spousal rape? Yeah. Can you rape your wife? And so I said, well, gee, I don't know. We got an expert right here. Let's ask him. Yeah. Poor guy. Put him on. I didn't realize what was going to happen, but we had to explain the question. He didn't even understand the question. I explained it. And he just very honestly answered, oh, you can't rape your wife. That's ridiculous. Your wife is supposed to do anything you want. You tell her to do anything you want, and she does it because she's your wife. That's what she's for. Women are for whatever men want, you know. And boy, these women all behind him are starting to go, you know, by God, you know, so we had to cut that discussion off to save this guy's life. But he was, you know, but it was a very natural reaction of his. But that's just the way it is. This purple handout here was the result of a gender war that was going on in a local high school. We went to a local high school because the white girls were ready to kill all the Chicano boys. And the principal asked us if we'd come up and talk to them. And so we get in the library, and at one end of the library is all the white girls. The other end of the library is all the Chicano boys, and they're at war. You know, they're sniping at each other and stuff. So we went in there, and this was, we handed out something to write on and asked them to write some comments. And it was at the end of what we talked about, so some of these are, you know. But the issue here was that the Chicano boys in the hallways would be saying things to the girls as they walked by. They would say, shh, shh, shh. God, I hate that. And girls just hate that. Shh, shh, shh. Hey, cutie. You know, where are you going, pretty girl? You know, stuff like that. Most of it is just stupid. It's just innocent stuff. It's the stuff that I did when I was a kid in Mexico. And it's pretty harmless. And what Mexican women do is stick their nose in the air and ignore you. That's what you do. You don't acknowledge it. But the white girls, of course, not knowing the language and so on, and not just didn't appreciate that, thought it was disrespectful. And so here they are at war. And they talk about respect. And so all of these comments came out. And it was over that issue, over the way the boys were treating the girls in the hallways of the high school. Those were some of their comments. One of the things that Orange Handout kind of brought out to us, a red flag, is name calling. Because one of the really grim statistics is that the social group in our country that has the highest suicide rate turns out to be adolescent Latinas. And if you ask them what their stress factors are, number one is family conflicts, where dad won't let him out the door and stuff like that. Rosemary talked a lot about that yesterday. But the second one that they mentioned is name calling and jokes by friends. By friends, not by others. They'll call each other, oh, you stupid Mexican, you don't understand a thing. You know, that kind of stuff. The name calling beaners, wetbacks, stuff like that. It's always serious. And we tell people, we urge people to adopt an absolute no tolerance for that. Because we know that the consequences are disastrous. So, and this purple sheet really shows that how much that's on their mind and how much it really affects them. How often they mention being called beaners and wetbacks is harmful. So, at the moment, it may be funny, you know, even among friends and so on, but it's something that builds that stress for these folks.
Okay. And that high reason for suicide, you know, the other part is that the girls are really looked at very differently. You know, the boys seem to be given a lot more credit because what's the saying, the boys?
Yeah. Girl gets married and the boy pays back.
The boy pays back, but the girl just goes off and gets married. And, you know, so they're pretty much treated that way. The girl is really not, doesn't receive a real high education. You know, she'll go to school, but to send her off to receive a higher education really is not that important. And the girls are really thought of, in some cases, as being a little less than the boys. Because after all, they'll just get married and they'll take off and you probably won't see them again. And so a lot of the girls, some of the girls, you know, part of their conflict is that, you know, they want to have a boyfriend or friends or to be allowed to go out and see their buddies or what have you. And that's not tolerated very well. I mean, to let the girl go out is just, you know, not something that they agree to easily, you know, even with friends. And so so what it leads to is the girl wanting to go, I mean, the girl having to sneak out of the house, or the girl getting married really, really young or really early because that's the only way that she can get out of the house for anything. And so then what happens is she ends up in a bad marriage or a mother really, really young, and she has to live with it. Because part of the Mexicano way is that you deal with it. You put up with it. If you're having problems with your marriage, that's your problem. You're going to have to learn to deal with it. And so lots of problems occur because of that. They're too young. They're in a marriage that really wasn't what they wanted in the first place. They were just trying to get away. They drop out of school to run away, that kind of thing. You had a question?
Yeah, do you see the purpose of your work to change the way things are done, or just to put a more neutral understanding on the differences?
I think for us, it's the second. It's to offer information and hope for the best. You know, like Harry Truman, I believe that the more people know, the more information they have, in the end they'll do the right thing. But it's up to us to give that information and lay it out on the table and hope that for the best. We often make the statement at the beginning of our presentations to kind of defuse the chips on the shoulders that we'll see from a lot of Anglo people who will say, and we got it yesterday, who will say, you know, why should we change the way we do things to accommodate these people, these stubborn people who come in here and won't learn English and won't, you know. And, I mean, and those are misconceptions. And, you know, we start out by saying, you know, we're not asking you to do anything. We're not asking you to behave in any way differently than you are now. But here's some information for you. And let's, you take it from there. Yeah.
Are there movies or books, novels or other things that you think that do a good job of portraying culture? It would be interesting. I'm reading the book Kite Runner right now. Afghani culture is all of a sudden more clear to me than it's ever been. I wonder if there's any other novels or movies that
yeah.
Culture.
We just saw a movie called Crash. Was it Crash? Was it
Crash?
Crash was,
that was
just
kind of weird.
Really interesting because it showed, I don't know if anyone has seen it. It's Sandra Bullock's in it. I think it's just because of her name she's in it, because she doesn't play a big role. But it's all about the ethnic groups. I think it's in Los Angeles or something. A big city. Anyway, it starts out with a car wreck between a Chinese lady and an Anglo lady. And they're just instantly angry and yelling at each other and ethnic slurs all over the place. And it goes all the way through. It just does a good job of showing how much anger there is in everyday life, and how she winds up at the end with the Mexican maid, you know, saying, "You're my only friend in life. You know, how did this happen?" You know, and at one point she says, "I'm just angry. I woke up angry today. I've been angry all day. I'm angry all the time." So that movie was pretty interesting.
It was also, to me, it was also a movie that for example, there were African Americans in this movie, and it put them in one particular scene, it kind of puts them in a situation where they have to go, they work for maybe an Anglo person, and then they're put in a situation where they have to go against their own people. You know, they have to make decisions and go against their own people so that they don't lose their job. And they're kind of stuck between having to make that decision of, do I really put down my own people, or do I stay with my job because I need the money and I need to support my family? And do I have my own people put me down because I'm now siding with the other? You know, and you really got to see that conflict of how hard it is for a person of color to have to try to survive in both worlds, you know, where you're either liked by the opposite culture and disliked by your own, or you're liked by your own and disliked by the other. I mean, it was really hard to be able to function and to have that, you know, to be able to bat that balance where you can live in both worlds comfortably and to keep your own sanity through it.
As far as books,
the other video is Spanglish. Mm-hmm. Spanglish was a good movie.
That was
it was a
good.
Cute movie. It was good, but it really gave you a look at how easy it is to step on someone's toes so easily. You know, how you can conflict with their culture so easily. You know, because the Anglo lady took. You know, in this movie, the lady was trying to be good, so she takes the little girl out shopping without really asking permission of the mother, and the mother's very offended by the fact that you took her daughter without permission. This is my daughter kind of thing. Anyway, it's really a cute movie that really gives you a good look at how easy it is to step on someone else's toes as far as culture goes. You had a question?
Not the Alamo.
Nothing.
You know, I was really curious when it came out. When it came out new again, another remake of the Alamo. I was really curious now to see in the year 2000 and something whether they would dispense with this love affair we have for Davy Crockett, Jim Bowie, and all those guys, and get real about it. And now they even made it worse. This ending of this one was just so absolutely incredible that, you know, there's a book called Duel of Eagles. I just love that book. It's the Mexican and U.S. Fight for the Alamo by Jeff Long. It's absolutely fascinating how history is written by the winners. Mm-hmm. And this guy goes into original documents. And he finds that, for example, in the Texas, the community around the Alamo, the complaints about rapes and robberies and so on, it all happens on the American side. There's nothing going on the Mexican side. Yeah. And in the end, there's some strong, pretty strong evidence that Davy Crockett dressed up as a woman and tried to sneak out of the Alamo. Now, none of us believe that or want to, but this guy finds it in the notes of the one of the Mexican corporals or something, that they caught Davy Crockett trying to sneak out with three other people or something. And they took him to the officer, and the officer said, shoot him. And that's how Davy Crockett met his end. The guy was sneaking out. You know, now that's just not something we don't want to deal with that. The rest of the book goes on about Santa Ana and stuff and the funny history of Santa Ana. But it's just a really good book about how history is written by the winners. The other one that I really like a lot is, and I'm sure many of you have read it, is Rain of Gold by Victor Villaseñor. It's an awesome book.
R-E-I-G-N?
No, Rain, R-E-I-N, Rain of Gold. If you haven't read that, you're in for a real treat. This is a great book. Huh?
The author again?
Villaseñor,
Victor.
V-I-L-L-A-S-E-N-O-R, Victor Villaseñor. Just a super book. It's autobiographical about his mother, father, grandparents, when they made that trek across the border and how they, you know, it's just a really good book that will give you a real shot of the culture. Rosemary has.
I like the bread. The bread. I like the book White Bread Competition. It's written by Joanne Hernandez. White Bread Competition, and it is about a spelling bee. It is about a little girl, competing in the spelling bee and the struggles that she goes through culturally. You know, whether she wins the spelling bee, how are they going to think about her? If she doesn't win the spelling bee, how does that affect her? And it just goes on and on, back and forth about, you know, she doesn't know what to do. Whether she's very good, but what if she wins? What if she doesn't? How? But you again get to see how she is really struggling to understand both cultures, to survive in both. And the movie A Day Without a Mexican is just a sweet movie, and that just talks about, you know, what would your life be without the Mexican worker who comes here to work, and all of a sudden they found that, my gosh, all of a sudden you don't have the pickers and you don't have the painters and you didn't have the baby, the nannies, and you didn't have this, and it was, surprisingly, it was a good movie. I thought, oh, I don't want to watch that movie. I was like offended right before I even took it home, you know. But it was okay. They did a very good job. They really did. They weren't putting anyone down, really. They were just stating something they said was
just
could really happen.
Just one day woke up and there were no Mexicans in Los Angeles. And what happens, you know?
Restaurants closed.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting.
It was interesting. And I thought they did a good job. They didn't really put anyone down. It was just, they were just stating something. That's
okay. Honey, at the level of personal interaction between Mexicans and Americans, there's very little. And that was one of my frustrations about when I went ahead and wrote mine. Because I went through and bought, you know, a bunch of different things. It was at the level of countries and philosophy and, you know, and the big topics like distant neighbors, Alan Riding, what's the other ones? Latinos by Earl Shores. Ilan Stavins writes a lot, the Hispanic condition, and so on. But it's all at a, it's not about, you know, you personally facing a Mexican guy and how do you get along. That was the level that I've always been interested in, and so as far as, you know, at that level of interaction, there's very little out there. Shall we go on with the time?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention on the chauvinistic that today we were observing in the lunch in the breakfast room dining area that there was a man there that was helping with the cleaning, and he was wearing an apron. And Jim, you know, Jim said, how would your Mexicano friends take that? And, you know, even my own relatives, my own brother-in-laws, when Jim does the dishes or Jim does the cooking in the house, they are like shaking their head, like, she's really got you trained, doesn't she? You know, making all these horrible comments about, you know, how Jim shouldn't be in the kitchen, and that's woman's work, and that's, you know, shouldn't be there. Why are you doing the cleaning? Did you get in trouble? You know, that kind of thing. Always these little comments underneath. But
your sister's like me, though.
But my sister's like him a lot.
I was going to say, do you hear this guy ribbing?
Oh, yeah.
And not as horrible, not with any depth, just guy agitation.
Yeah, I think that's
giving you a hard time.
Right, it's at that level.
It is, but really they wouldn't do it.
Right.
I mean, they wouldn't do that at home. It's not like them to wash dishes or to start the washer, although all you have to do is turn the knob, right? It's not in them to do that kind of thing. I mean, when I was married before, you know, my ex-husband wouldn't carry the baby in public. That was just not something you did. And you wouldn't dare carry the diaper bag. And there were so many things you just didn't do. And so then I get married to Jim, and he's in the kitchen, and he's, you know, he's doing the cooking for us sometimes, and the washing of dishes and the laundry, or maybe even the sweeping.
I'm a good deal, man.
And he's a great package, you know. but it's something that they really seriously wouldn't do at home. They unless the wife was very ill and she, you know, couldn't get out of bed, then maybe they'd do that.
They'd expect the oldest daughter to.
Yeah, and the oldest daughter might be 10 years old, and she may be doing that, what the mom would be doing.
Her brothers and brothers-in-law will sit there and say, give me a glass of water, just like that. And I go, ooh.
and the pitcher might be within reach.
Yeah, and the sister,
you know, the
will
pitcher
get
might
up
be within
and walk
reach.
Over and grab the pitcher. Mm-hmm. And that's, nobody even comments about it. And I'm going, wow, try that in my family.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember.
Do you lose place because he does those things that you are supposed to do culturally?
I don't think so.
I do, but, you know. I think they see her as spoiled, you know. And I think, they comment about it. You know.
I think growing up, I think I was. They saw me as being spoiled. I was spoiled. You know, that's how I was titled, a spoiled kid.
Yeah.
Because I got, you know, I ended up in the hospital and all this and that. And so my dad said, you can't hit her. You've got to treat her nice. And you can't be hitting her and making her angry kind of thing.
She's not a real woman because she doesn't stand there making those tortillas, unlike her sisters.
Yeah. So I kind of grew up that way because they weren't allowed to hit me or to make me upset kind of thing. Because of that. And so I grew up with that nickname of being spoiled. And then I get married to Jim, who, I mean, he doesn't do it all the time because I do my share of it. But
they just don't see that.
They don't see that,
they
I guess,
when
we're around.
When
yeah. But, you know, the guys, my brothers, will do the barbecuing. I mean, that's a manly thing. You know, that's the long fork and the long... that's a manly thing, you know, the spraying and the...
Apron or not?
Probably not.
They don't have any aprons.
No aprons. But, you know, but that's as far as it goes. And anything that looks womanly or feels like it. So we saw the man with the apron, and you know, but I do have some brothers. I have two pastors in my family, and one that another, a third one that probably wanted to be but didn't go all the way through. And so they, you know, they have retreats like this, and they, you know, I'm sure they wear the apron kind of thing. So it's, you know, it's okay. So, you know, but we were just wondering, how would people take that? And I guess you wouldn't get the real chauvinistic kind of guys here anyway, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Do you?
Some. Are you talking about Angles or?
Latinos.
They're everywhere, Rosemary. Chauvinistic men.
Well, part of the reality during Abriendo is often that the mothers and children come because the men can't take off a whole work,
mm-hmm.
week of work, and we're trying to find ways to
mm-hmm.
say, well, if the husbands can just come for the weekend, is there a way for them to share with their families?
Sure.
this chance to get away. Or if it's vacation, yeah, but I've got to mow the lawn and get the house painted and all of that. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely, there are more
women
with their children
than
intact
sure.
father-mother families.
Well, we'll have to challenge you to get to the Catholic Church and have the Catholics come out here and do one of their marriage encounter things here, and in conjunction with you at Holden, and let's see how, put that in a blender and see how that comes out. There's a challenge for you.
Yep, on a number of levels.
Yeah. More chauvinistic of all, be a priest.
Guess we're going to move to time.
Okay,
natural time.
As opposed to clock time.
Speaking of which,
Is about.
We'll do for a break shortly. So.
Well, okay. You know what? This is probably
a good time
because it's 10:05.
Great.
Okay.
We could take
a break.